March 10th, 2007. Chaco and Indy, North Carolina. The mother of 19-year-old university student Ginny Wood calls her up on her cell phone. Ginny tells her mother that she has traveled to Brownsville, Texas for spring break in order to visit her 19-year-old best friend Kelly Askins and Kelly's 23-year-old boyfriend Irvin Williams, but after their phone conversation ends, Ginny is never heard from again. However, it turns out that Irvin is a fugitive who fled North Carolina after failing to appear in court on numerous felony charges, and Kelly is also wanted for a probation violation. This leads to speculation that the couple traveled across the border into Mexico in order to evade the authorities and took Ginny with them, but no trace of these three missing persons is ever found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we're going to be exploring an odd case involving not one, not two, but three people who simultaneously went missing. The 2007 disappearances of Ginny Wood, Kelly Gaskins, and Irvin Williams. Anyway, today's story was featured on an episode of Disappeared titled The Road Not Taken, but even though it originally aired 12 years ago, I don't recall having watched it until recently. And what's odd is that out of all the cases featured on Disappeared, this might be the one which has had the least amount of outside media coverage both before and after the episode aired, and there do not appear to have been any new developments in the investigation over the past decade. What's particularly unique about this case is that two of the three missing individuals are technically wanted fugitives. The victim who has received the most attention is Ginny Wood, a 19-year-old freshman attending Appalachian State University in North Carolina, who left on a trip down south to visit her 19-year-old best friend, Kelly Gaskins, over spring break. Kelly was supposedly living in the border town of Brownsville, Texas, with her 23-year-old boyfriend, Irvin Williams. But what Ginny's family did not realize is that Irvin was wanted for having failed to appear in court on a number of felony charges, and while Kelly was on probation for a misdemeanor, she had violated it by leaving the state of North Carolina without permission. It's been theorized that the couple managed to cross the border into Mexico, and Ginny later joined them there, but all three of them would eventually vanish without a trace. While numerous theories have been pushed forward about what happened to the trio, there is no conclusive evidence pointing towards any of them, and obviously, one of the biggest obstacles to figuring everything out is that the American law enforcement agencies handling this case have no jurisdiction in Mexico. All we do know is that Ginny, Kelly, and Irvin have not been seen in 17 years, so we're going to explore all the different possibilities on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content, as our Patreon page currently has around 70 exclusive bonus episodes and archives, which are not available on a regular feed. So with all that out of the way, let us now start exploring the disappearances of Ginny Wood, Kelly Gaskins, and Irvin Williams. Our story begins in 2007, and our first central figure is 19-year-old Virginia Lynn Wood, who goes by the name Ginny. Ginny was originally born in Chocowinity, North Carolina, a small town located in Beaufort County, which had a population of just over 800 people at that time. After graduating with honors from high school, Ginny is currently a freshman at Appalachian State University in Boone, who is majoring in accounting and has garnered such stellar grades that she has managed to make the dean's list. However, Ginny has also been described as a very shy and quiet person, and since she initially had trouble making new friends at the university, she would often make the 300-mile drive back and forth between Boone and Chocowinity in order to visit her friends and family back home. As her first semester went along, Ginny became more outgoing and gradually started to make new friends, and after living her freshman year in the university dorm, she is hoping to start living in her own apartment off campus when she returns for her sophomore year. When her first semester came to an end, Ginny informed her mother, Tammy Wood, that instead of returning home for spring break, she was planning to go visit 19-year-old Kelly Gaskins, who had been her closest friend in high school, but had since moved away from Chocowinity. While Kelly used to do well in school, she started struggling once she reached the 12th grade, and ultimately wound up failing and did not graduate. It was believed that Kelly's academic performance began to decline when she started hanging around with the wrong crowd, which included her 23-year-old boyfriend, Irvin Williams. Irvin was known for having a quote-unquote bad boy image, and was quite controlling of Kelly, and even got her involved with drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana. Since Kelly's mother, Denise Wilson, did not approve of Irvin, this caused their own relationship to drift apart, and Denise gave her daughter an ultimatum about following her rules if she wanted to remain in her house. The tension between Kelly and Denise became so strong that Kelly wound up moving in with Ginny and her family for 6 months. When Ginny left for university, Kelly attempted to move back in with her mother, but things still did not work out. She attempted to repeat the 12th grade, but wound up flunking out of school, so she moved in with Irvin and his family. However, shortly after Christmas in 2006, the couple decided to leave town and move down south. Ginny told her mother Tammy that Kelly and Irvin had relocated to the city of Brownsville, Texas, which is located right next to the United States-Mexico border. She said that the couple had both gotten jobs working at a hotel, and her plan was to make the 1,400-mile drive there from Boone in order to visit them for spring break. On March the 8th, Ginny left her university dorm in her Nissan Sentra in order to begin the drive, and the following day, she phoned Tammy to confirm that she had arrived in Brownsville and was staying with Kelly and Irvin. On the evening of March the 10th, Tammy called Ginny's cell phone to see how she was doing, but Ginny said that she was currently watching a movie with Kelly and would phone her back later. However, after the call ended, this would turn out to be the last time Ginny was confirmed to be alive. Over the course of the next week, Tammy made numerous attempts to call Ginny, but kept getting her voicemail. Tammy never heard back from her daughter, and things eventually reached the point where Ginny's voicemail became full and would not accept any more messages. Ginny never returned to Appalachian State University, and even though spring break came to an end, she did not show up for any of her next scheduled classes on March the 18th, which was very uncharacteristic of her. Since Tammy could still not reach Ginny, she decided to call Kelly's mother Denise, and was surprised to learn that Denise had not heard from her own daughter for 2 months, and was not even aware that Ginny had been planning to visit Kelly. According to Denise, Kelly had not informed her when she left Chocowinity with Irvin at the end of 2006, and she only found out when Kelly called her on January the 18th. However, even though Ginny had claimed that Kelly and Irvin were residing in Brownsville, Kelly told her mother that they were living in the city of Matamoros, Mexico, which is located directly across the border from Brownsville. Kelly said that she and Irvin had gotten jobs working for a hotel in Matamoros, but she did not like living there. Even though Denise offered to send Kelly a bus ticket back to North Carolina, or even drive down there herself to pick her up, Kelly said she wanted to stay and make the situation work, but she never made any further communication with her mother. Whenever Denise attempted to phone Kelly back at the number she called from, no one would answer, and things eventually reached the point where the number stopped working. After learning all this new information, Tammy became concerned enough to contact the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office in order to officially report Ginny missing. Ginny's computer would be seized from her university dorm room, and it turned up some communications between her and Kelly, which revealed that Ginny had been feeling seriously depressed. Not only did Ginny miss her best friend, but two relationships had also come to an end in the months prior to her disappearance. After breaking up with her high school boyfriend, Ginny had briefly become involved with Irvin's younger brother, Hubert Williams, but it also did not work out. Losing two boyfriends so close together had made Ginny so depressed that she briefly mentioned suicide during her communications with Kelly, but Tammy felt that Ginny's spirits had lifted by the time spring break rolled around, and she seemed very excited about her trip to visit Kelly. Ginny's cell phone records revealed that following her last conversation with her mother on March the 10th, a number of incoming and outgoing calls were made from her phone over the next 4 days, which pinged off cell towers in a number of different cities in Mexico. The last recorded call took place at 8:18 p.m. on March the 14th, in or around the city of Monterrey, which is about 300 kilometers west of Matamoros. It also turned out that a credit card Ginny was carrying had been used to make a $24 purchase at a grocery store in Matamoros shortly after Ginny's final call with her mother, but there were no further transactions on this card. It seems certain that Ginny had crossed over the border into Mexico at some point, and when she left her dorm room in North Carolina, she reportedly took along her social security card and a copy of her birth certificate in order to use as identification. According to one of her friends, Ginny had discussed the possibility of traveling to Cancun with Kelly and Irvin, even though it was located over 2,200 kilometers southeast of Matamoros and would have required at least 28 hours to drive there. At the time, Ginny was driving a black 2003 Nissan Sentra with license number TTZ6801, but all attempts to track this vehicle down went nowhere, and searches that were made on the license number and vehicle identification number for the car that Kelly and Irvin were last known to be driving also came up empty. The Beaufort County Sheriff's Office, as well as the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, contacted the U.S. Consulate in Matamoros and provided them with the names and information for Ginny, Kelly, and Irvin, but nothing could be found to indicate that the three of them had ever shown up in Mexican jails, hospitals, or anywhere else. Well, what further complicated the situation is that it turned out that Kelly and Irvin were technically both wanted fugitives. In August of 2006, Kelly had been arrested for misdemeanor drug possession in Chaco and Itty after she was caught carrying marijuana and received a suspended sentence and 36 months probation, but she violated the terms of her probation when she left the state without permission. As a result, a warrant was issued for Kelly's arrest by the North Carolina Department of Corrections. However, Irvin's situation was a lot more serious. On June the 14th, 2005, Irvin and his father, Braxton Williams, went to the unincorporated community of Blount's Creek in order to visit an acquaintance who was involved in narcotics dealing with Braxton. Things wound up escalating to the point where Irvin pointed a gun at this person, and both he and his father set fire to the home. Irvin and Braxton were soon arrested by the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office and were scheduled to appear in court for a hearing to face their charges, but on June the 18th, Braxton wound up taking his own life at the age of 50. Irvin was hit with a number of felony charges, including first-degree arson, first-degree burglary, assault by pointing a gun, and possession of cocaine and marijuana. He was released on bond and was scheduled to appear in court again on January the 8th, 2007, but by that point, he had already fled the state with Kelly. When Irvin and Kelly first left Chaco and Itty, they had taken along Irvin's younger brother, Hubert, as well as their sister, Pauline. But at some point, Irvin apparently told his siblings that he was planning to go to Mexico in order to avoid facing prosecution for his charges and was never coming back, so Hubert and Pauline parted ways with him in Florida and took a bus back to North Carolina. It now seemed apparent that Irvin and Kelly had continued on their journey and managed to cross the border at some point. In fact, one of Kelly's friends told her family that Irvin and Kelly had said they were planning to go to Mexico to sell drugs. It seemed like the couple had lived there for at least a few months, but sometime after Ginny joined them, they all vanished without a trace. Since Kelly was technically a wanted fugitive for violating her probation, the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office initially told her family that they could not register a missing persons report for her, and a report was never actually filed until 2015. Hubert and Pauline were both interviewed numerous times by law enforcement, but maintained that they did not know Irvin and Kelly's whereabouts and never made any contact with her brother after they parted ways in Florida. On October the 19th, 2008, Hubert took his own life via a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the age of 20, though investigators have stated that they do not believe his suicide has any connection to Irvin's disappearance. In July of 2007, the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office received a number of tips who claimed that Irvin had been seen in Chaco and Itty driving a white truck with Texas plates and made more than one visit to a local convenience store. Rumors started circulating that Irvin returned to the area to visit his mother, but had changed his look so much that most people wouldn't recognize him. However, even though the sheriff's office checked surveillance footage from the aforementioned convenience store, they did not turn up any trace of Irvin, and while numerous searches were performed of Irvin's mother's home, they failed to find any evidence that he had been there. Since none of these sightings of Irvin could be confirmed, the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office remained skeptical that he ever returned to Chaco and Itty, and unfortunately, they say they do not have the resources or legal authority to travel to Mexico in order to follow up on any potential leads from there. This story would receive national exposure when it was featured on an episode of Disappear titled The Road Not Taken, which aired in January of 2012. The episode featured an interview by Gilbert Arizolo, a Houston-based attorney and Mexican national who was hired by Ginny's family to search for her in Mexico due to his experience helping out with missing persons cases near the Texas-Mexico border. Shortly after Ginny was reported missing, Gilbert and his brother had traveled to Brownsville and Matamoros in order to distribute a number of missing persons flyers for Ginny and Kelly, which offered a $500 reward for information. Gilbert wound up receiving information that Kelly was employed as a maid at the Fontana Inn in Matamoros while Irvin performed maintenance work for them. This seemed to match the story which Kelly had shared with her mother during their final phone conversation, but even though Gilbert stayed at the Fontana Inn for a while, he did not see Kelly or Irvin or come across anyone else who admitted to knowing them. In the end, Gilbert cannot turn up any conclusive evidence that the couple or Ginny were in Matamoros. However, since Ginny had previously made remarks about traveling to Cancun for spring break, Gilbert decided to travel there, and he would also be joined by Ginny's mother, Tammy. But even though they both spent a lot of time distributing missing persons flyers throughout Cancun, they failed to turn up any strong leads. Officially, there have not been any confirmed sightings of Ginny Wood, Kelly Gaskins, or Irvin Williams since March of 2007, and after 17 years, all three of them continue to remain missing persons. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So at the time of this recording, Disappeared has produced a total of 11 seasons, and a decent amount of cases from the show's first several seasons have wound up being solved. Some of them have concluded with the victim being found, both dead or alive, while others have been resolved with a suspect being charged and convicted for the missing victim's murder. Their episode, The Road Not Taken, is one in which the featured case is still completely unsolved, and what makes it a bit different from the norm is that while it featured three missing people, two of them were technically wanted fugitives. And like I mentioned in the intro, it seems like there was very little media coverage of this story before it was featured on Disappeared, and there's been even less media coverage after the episode aired, and virtually no new developments in the investigation. Of course, this may have a lot to do with the fact that Ginny Wood, Kelly Gaskins, and Irvin Williams all seemingly vanished in Mexico, where American law enforcement does not have jurisdiction, but even independent searches performed by private investigators like Gilbert Arizzolo have failed to turn up any evidence of what happened to any of these three missing individuals. Yes, Irvin and Kelly were probably doing what they could to avoid being found, but even though the victims' families have always held out hope that they are still alive, it's hard to imagine that two young people with very few resources could manage to support themselves and stay off the radar for 17 years, even if they did manage to flee to a foreign country. And of course, since Ginny had no criminal record, was excelling academically, and had a bright future to look forward to, there would have been little motivation for her to voluntarily take off to Mexico and start a new life, while cutting off all contact with her family. Obviously, since Ginny was not a fugitive, the disappeared episode made her the central focus, as a missing persons report had not yet officially been filed for Kelly at the time it originally aired. But while the episode did not shy away from Kelly's mistakes and personal issues, it did give a voice to her mother, Denise Wilson. Even though they had developed a contentious relationship before Kelly went missing, the show did not let the viewer forget that Kelly still had a family out there who missed her and wanted to learn the truth about what happened. As for Irvin, he was portrayed as a troubled and potentially dangerous individual, and none of his family members were interviewed on the show. By that point, Irvin had already lost his father and brother to suicide, and from what I've read about her online, his mother was not the nicest person in the world. However, there's been some question about whether the episode's portrayal of Ginny as a shy, quiet girl who had trouble making friends was entirely accurate. Well, even though there hasn't been any recent media coverage of this case, I actually came across some interesting new information in a thread about this story at the Web Sleuths forum, as a number of comments were made there in 2021 by a poster under the username ClockJane7890. Obviously, you can never be 100% certain that all the information shared in an internet forum is true, but ClockJane7890 is listed as a quote-unquote verified insider, and Web Sleuth seems to have a system in place in order to confirm if posters claiming to have a personal connection to the featured cases are legitimate. So I have to assume that the information she has shared there is probably true, and as an aside, in order to avoid having to constantly repeat her lengthy username, I'm simply going to refer to her as Jane from here on out. Well, even though Kelly was Ginny's best friend back home in Chaco and Itty, Jane claimed that she became Ginny's new best friend when she attended Appalachian State University. She believed that the disappeared episode's portrayal of Ginny was the show putting their own spin on things, because rather than being a shy person who had trouble making new friends, Jane said that Ginny was actually a pretty wild partier during her time at the university. She also provided some additional insight about Ginny's brief relationship with Irvin's brother Hubert, as Ginny apparently left her high school boyfriend to be with him, but then had her heart broken when Hubert wound up getting another girl pregnant. That information does check out, because I found Hubert's obituary online, and it listed him as being survived by a son. What's particularly interesting about Jane's Web Sleuth's comments is that she claims that she and Ginny were supposed to visit Kelly and Irvin in Mexico together for spring break, and they would all subsequently travel to Cancun together. But it sounds like Jane backed out after Ginny revealed that Kelly and Irvin were fugitives from the law. Here's an exact word-for-word transcript of what Jane wrote about her final interactions with Ginny. Quote, "The last morning I saw her, we smoked a bowl, and I begged her not to go and cried my eyes out. She kept promising me how she was coming back. She made some comment about bringing drugs back for me to help her sell. She told me if she decided to stay down there longer, I was to mail stuff to her. I never got that phone call. The last time I spoke to her was March the 9th, 2007, as she was crossing the border into Mexico, and then she called her ex-boyfriend, not Hubert." End quote. Needless to say, some of these details were not included in the Disappeared episode, but if they are true, I can understand why the show may have felt compelled to leave them out in order to portray Ginny in the most sympathetic light possible. That isn't to say that Ginny was not a good person, but if she really was planning to bring drugs back from Mexico and sell them, then some viewers might be more judgmental towards her. Granted, I'm not sure we're talking about smuggling hard drugs like cocaine or meth across the border, but since Jane said that Ginny smoked marijuana, perhaps she was planning to bring some back. During her comments, Jane also confirmed something which I always suspected, and that Ginny apparently lied to her mother Tammy when she said she was visiting Kelly and Irvin in Brownsville, Texas, as they were likely living in Matamoros at that point, and Tammy may have objected over her daughter traveling to Mexico. It's interesting how Jane said that she spoke to Ginny on her cell phone while she was crossing the border on March the 9th, because the last confirmed communication with Ginny took place when Tammy called her cell phone on March the 10th. During the call, Ginny told her mother that she was with Kelly and they were busy watching a movie, and it sounded like she was in a hurry to get off the phone. And while Ginny promised Tammy that she would call her back, she never did, and all subsequent calls to her phone went straight to voicemail. Now, if Ginny was actually in Mexico rather than Texas when she received that call, this could explain why her conversation with Tammy was so brief, as Ginny may have been doing more than simply watching a movie at that time. Jane also claimed that the credit card Ginny was carrying had been given to her by her mother, so Ginny implied that she wasn't going to use it while in Mexico, because if a transaction from there showed up on her credit card statement, then Tammy would find out that Ginny crossed the border. If true, could this mean that Ginny was not the one who used the card to make the purchase at the grocery store in Matamoros? Now, you'll probably recall that there were a number of incoming and outgoing calls from Ginny's cell phone, which took place throughout Mexico between March the 10th and the 14th. Jane claimed that she somehow got a hold of Ginny's phone records and asked a Spanish guy in her dorm to call the numbers listed and translate for her. And here's another word-for-word transcript of what Jane wrote. Quote, "One number answered and lied to us, saying they had just gotten the phone number however many weeks ago and did not know anything. But given the dates, they would have had the phone number during the time Ginny's phone made contact with it." End quote. Indeed, it is frustrating that we don't have more information about these numbers, because if they weren't linked to anyone who had a known association with Ginny, then this suggests that someone else was using her phone during this time period. Like I mentioned earlier, I can't say with 100% certainty that everything that Jane wrote on the Web Sleuth forum is true, but the information she shared does check out with the known facts. Before she left on her trip, Ginny told her mother that Kelly and Irvin had both gotten jobs working at a hotel in Brownsville, and it sounds like this is partially true, since Gilbert Arizola would later turn up information to indicate that the couple may have worked at a hotel called the Fontana Inn at Matamoros. And on January the 18th, just under 2 months before Ginny went missing, Denise Wilson received a phone call from Kelly in which she revealed that she and Irvin were now living in Matamoros and were working at a hotel there. And I think it's safe to say that if Kelly and Irvin were already in Mexico at that point, it's very unlikely that they went back to Texas when Ginny made her trip down there. These days, if you want to drive across the border from the United States into Mexico, you need to provide a passport and valid proof of registration for your vehicle, but from what I've read, security was a bit more lax back then. On January the 23rd, 2007, it officially became mandatory to use a passport for airline travel to Mexico, but for about a year afterward, you could still drive across the border with only a driver's license or birth certificate. Since Kelly and Irvin left North Carolina before Irvin's court hearing for his felony charges was scheduled to take place, I think they likely made it to the border before a warrant was issued for Irvin's arrest, so they were probably able to cross into Mexico without issue. And since Kelly was only on probation for a misdemeanor drug possession charge, I doubt she would have raised any red flags. We know that Kelly called her mother from Matamoros on January the 18th, but if she and Irvin made an attempt to cross back into the U.S. after this point, I think they would have run into some problems, which is why I do not believe they were residing in Brownsville by the time Ginny arrived there. It sounds like Ginny took along her Social Security card and a copy of her birth certificate when she left North Carolina, and since she had no criminal record, I'm sure she would have been able to cross the border without issue. But like I just said, security for driving across the U.S.-Mexico border was a lot more lax in early 2007, so that probably explains why there's no record of the license number or vehicle identification numbers for Ginny or Irvin's respective vehicles in the system. While it seems likely that Ginny did meet up with Kelly and Irvin in Mexico at some point, the big question is, what happened to them afterward? Well, for starters, I think we can completely discount all those sightings of Irvin, which took place in Chaco and Itty during the summer of 2007. Even though multiple witnesses believe that they saw Irvin in town and that he had returned there to visit his mother, I have my doubts that he would have been able to make it across the border into the U.S. without being flagged. And even if he managed to cross the border illegally, it would be awfully brazen for him to return back to his small hometown of around 800 people, where he would likely stick out like a sore thumb. Since the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office failed to turn up any evidence that Irvin had been there, I have a feeling that the eyewitnesses who reported seeing Irvin mistook him for someone else. I also find it amusing that rumors started circulating that Irvin had changed his look so much that most people wouldn't recognize him. Instead of seeing Irvin and believing that he looked different because he changed his looks, wouldn't the more logical explanation be that they simply saw a completely different person? When Irvin originally left Chaco and Itty, he took his brother Hubert and sister Pauline with him, but when he revealed that he was crossing the border into Mexico and had no intention of coming back, his siblings decided to hop on a bus back home. Granted, I'm not sure Irvin had much of a long-term plan after he escaped to Mexico, but given the number of felony charges he was facing, I could see him doing some serious prison time if he was convicted, so he probably felt it was worth the risk, and managed to convince Kelly to accompany him as well. However, during her final phone call to her mother, Kelly gave off the impression that she was unhappy in Mexico, and it wasn't everything it was cracked up to be. I do believe that Kelly and Irvin probably did get jobs at the Fontana Inn in Matamoros, but I'm sure they weren't making much money, and it's unclear if they were actually living at the hotel or residing elsewhere. When Ginny left on her trip, it does not sound like she ever provided an exact address where she was going, so I don't know where she would have met up with Kelly and Irvin. Since one of Kelly's friends claimed that she had talked about her and Irvin selling drugs in Mexico, it's possible this was the couple's main plan to support themselves. But as I'm sure everyone is aware, drugs are a very dangerous business in Mexico, and if you cross paths with the wrong people down there, you can easily wind up dead. During Jane's comments on Web Sleuths, she said that Ginny had told her that she might stay in Mexico longer than she originally planned, and if this happened, she would get in touch with Jane and ask her to mail some items down to her. Of course, this never took place, but was Ginny intending to stay down there longer than spring break and potentially miss some classes? I know there were signs that Ginny was feeling depressed or possibly even suicidal due to her two most recent breakups, but would these issues have been enough for her to give up everything and start over? However, let's not forget that Ginny had supposedly invited Jane to accompany her on a road trip to Mexico, and I doubt she would have done that if she had no intention of coming back. It sounds like the original plan was for them to join Kelly and Irvin and travel to Cancun together, but that would have been a pretty major undertaking. Cancun is literally located on the most eastern tip of Mexico, over 2,200 kilometers away from Matamoros, and it would take over 28 hours for someone to drive there after crossing the border. There are any number of potential things which could have gone wrong during a trip like that, and while the resorts in Cancun are quite nice, other sections of the city have been overrun with poverty and crime and can be quite dangerous. While we have no idea if Ginny, Kelly, and Irvin headed towards Cancun, here's what we know about the timeline. The last time anyone can confirm having spoken with Ginny was when her mother called her on March the 10th, and shortly thereafter, The credit card she was carrying was used to make a $24 purchase at a grocery store in Matamoros. While we can't be certain that Ginny herself used the card, I'm inclined to think that if it was stolen, whoever had it would have used it more than once and spent over $24. But I'm not so certain if Ginny personally received and made all the calls from her cell phone that took place between March the 10th and the 14th. I find it troubling that the last known call took place in Monterey, which is 300 kilometers west of Matamoros. If Ginny was planning to travel to Cancun, it wouldn't make much sense for her to go to Monterey, which is in the opposite direction, so what would she have been doing there? I'll once again reiterate that it's frustrating that we don't have more details about these incoming and outgoing calls, but perhaps this is information that law enforcement has intentionally chosen to withhold from the public. But we know that Tammy left multiple voicemails during that time period, and if Ginny heard them, she should have known that Tammy would become worried if she didn't call her back. So this suggests to me that either Ginny was involved in something that she did not want her mother to find out about, or she no longer had possession of the phone. What's interesting is that during the disappeared episode, they show some screenshots of Ginny's phone records, and if you look closely, it appears that some of her calls went to Charlotte, North Carolina, which is about 265 miles away from Chaco and Itty. As far as I know, no one else has ever admitted to speaking with Ginny on the phone after March the 10th, so could Kelly or Irvin have taken possession of the phone and made calls to someone in or around Charlotte? Learning more specific details about how this phone was used could provide some further insight into what happened, but unfortunately, we just don't have this information. In addition to Ginny's cell phone, we also have no idea what happened to her 2003 Nissan Sentra. It's very likely that she used it to drive into Mexico, but if it had been driven back across the border into the United States, the vehicle likely would have been flagged. But since the American investigative agencies don't have any jurisdiction in Mexico, I'm sure that trying to track down one missing vehicle in an entire country would be virtually impossible for them. Now, it's easy to assume that Ginny could have been murdered and someone stole her Sentra and it wound up in a chop shop or something, but to play devil's advocate, what if Ginny, Kelly, and Irvin were simply the victims of a tragic accident? If they decided to leave Matamoros in order to travel to Cancun, the quickest route would be to use Federal Highway 180, and a good portion of this route would involve them driving past the Gulf of Mexico. So, theoretically, they could have accidentally driven into the water somewhere, which would explain why neither the three missing victims or their vehicle has ever been found. However, given the suspicious circumstances of how they disappeared, I can see why it would be tempting to believe that one or more of them became the victims of foul play. One theory which has often been pushed forward in online discussions about this case is that Irvin may have been directly responsible for Ginny's disappearance. Since Irvin was a wanted fugitive hiding from the law, he may have become paranoid that Ginny would disclose his location to the authorities once she returned to the United States, so he decided she was a liability and decided to kill her. However, I've seen some comments in places like the WebSleuth forum from people claiming to have known Irvin personally, and while they acknowledge that he was a criminal who hailed from a troubled family, they did not feel like he was the type of person who was capable of murdering someone in cold blood. So they are inclined to believe that if Ginny, Kelly, or both of them were murdered, it was likely done by an outside party, and Irvin was killed alongside the two women. The suicide of his brother Hubert in 2008 could be taken as a sign that he had learned some horrible news about Irvin, which compelled Hubert to take his own life, but investigators have always been inclined to believe that the two events are not related, as it sounds like Hubert already had a number of serious issues which had nothing to do with his brother's disappearance. Overall, the theory that makes the most logical sense to me is that if Irvin was trying to become involved in the drug trade in Mexico, he may have crossed paths with the wrong people, and this led to him, Ginny, and Kelly being killed. Or perhaps they were not involved in anything like that at all, and the three of them were just the victims of a random carjacking or something, and were murdered before their bodies were disposed of. Whatever happened, the big issue is that the American authorities are powerless to do anything, and I doubt that the Mexican authorities are conducting an active investigation. As you can imagine, having a loved one go missing in a foreign country can be a person's worst nightmare due to all the bureaucracy and jurisdictional red tape that are involved. While hiring independent private investigators is always an option, it doesn't help when there is virtually no evidence to work with. Even though Gilbert Arizzolo picked up a few potential leads during his investigation in Mexico, it did not bring him any closer to figuring out what happened to Ginny, Kelly, or Irvin. While I pushed forward a number of potential theories about what could have happened to them, they are really nothing more than speculation. Even though Ginny has received the most attention out of these missing persons, we cannot forget that even though Kelly may have violated her probation and made a number of mistakes, she is still a human being who is greatly missed by her family, and they still want answers. And while Irvin was definitely a very troubled individual who did some bad things, I'd stop short of accusing him of doing something as extreme as murdering Ginny or Kelly without conclusive evidence. For all we know, he may very well be a victim too. Since 17 years have now passed since these three individuals went missing, it might be hard to conclusively solve this case, but regardless, we should always be sure to spread awareness and ensure they are not forgotten. So if by chance you happen to have any information about the disappearances of Ginny Wood, Kelly Gaskins, and Irvin Williams, please contact the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office at 252-946-0101. That's 252-946-0101. You can also contact the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation at 919-662-4500. That's 919-662-4500. But if you have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past 6 years, our Patreon page has released nearly 70 exclusive bonus episodes, which are all currently available in our archives for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3. This past month, I actually released a bonus episode, which is our podcast's second special edition of The Trail Revisited, and this time, I'm taking a fresh look at the infamous Circleville Letters case. I originally covered that story on the podcast 6 years ago, but I've since learned a ton of new information, which has caused me to look at the case in a different light. So I decided to put together an entirely new episode. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spinoff podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, cover another memorable case from Unsolved Mysteries, the 1989 disappearance of Patricia Meehan. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries, and we now have over 60 of these commentary tracks in our archives. Oh, and as an extra special bonus, I recorded an additional audio commentary over the recent Unsolved Mysteries Behind the Legacy documentary, and this one is available to all of our Patreon subscribers. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Louise H., PLB McCauley, Anna M., and Sarah. Thank you all so much for your support. I wanted to remind everyone that later this year, The Trail Went Cold has been booked to appear on Podcast Row at two separate CrimeCon events. The American CrimeCon, which is taking place at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel in Nashville from May the 31st to June the 2nd, and CrimeCon UK, which is taking place at 133 Houndsditch in London on September the 21st and 22nd. If you would like to purchase tickets, we have a specialized promo code to get a 10% discount at both events, so please visit crimecon.com or crimecon.co.uk and use the promo code COOL24. Once again, that's crimecon.com and crimecon.co.uk, and the promo code is COOL24 for 10% off tickets to both events. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. Thank you.